What you watch depends on what kind of mood you're in. Sometimes you're craving comedies like Friends or South Park, and sometimes you're more into dramas like HBO's Succession and House of the Dragon. There's also cooking shows like Chopped and Beat Bobby Flay, and even movies like The Lord of the Rings and Shazam! Fury of the Gods. Well, Max is the streaming destination that has the best of entertainment for whatever mood you're in anytime. And plans start at as little as $9.99 a month. Max, the one to watch. Subscription required. Visit max.com.
Walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer, then no time left for a jog.
When everyone else is relying on you, it's easy to put your needs last. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. Visit betterhelp.com/positive to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/positive.
Anywhere that you are, thanks so much for joining us as we morph a Monday from a Sunday. We're moving on, starting a new work week, and no holiday weekend relief for you. No, get your butts up and at them. Let's go. We got plenty to talk about always on the first show of the work week, and just happens that we had NBA Finals game number 2 a few hours ago, and the Miami Heat do what they do. This is their MO. They rally in the fourth quarter. They play better when they have no other choice, though they also left the door just cracked a little bit, enough for the Denver Nuggets to get one last look.
They're not going to call a timeout. Denver needs a three-pointer to tie the thing up. 7 seconds left to go for Jamal Murray. Murray has the bottom part of the midcourt circle. Step back three. Missed it short, and there's the horn. Denver loses game 2 of the NBA Finals tonight to the Miami Heat, 111 to 108.
Now let's talk about effort. I mean, this is NBA Finals, and we're talking about effort. That's a huge concern of mine. You know, and you guys probably thought I was just making up some storyline after game 1 when I said we didn't play well. We didn't play well. And tonight, you know, that the starting lineup to start the game, it's 10-2 Miami. Start the third quarter, they scored 11 points in 2 minutes and 10 seconds. And we just got, you know, we had guys out there that were just whether feeling sorry for themselves or not making shots or thinking they can just turn it on or off. This is not the preseason. This is not the regular season. It's not round. This is the NBA Finals. And that to me is really, really perplexing, disappointing.
Michael Malone is never shy about taking aim at lack of effort or his team being soft. We've heard it all year long. He's got high expectations for this team in the NBA Finals. Jason Kosmicki with the call on Denver Nuggets Radio. We are headed to Denver now. We're pleased to welcome our friend Matt Moore, who covers the league for the Action Network and was there at game number 2. Matt, as you hear the comments from Mike Malone, what's your reaction?
Not really surprised. The players kind of owned up to it as well. You know, he said that he asked the players point blank why they lost that game, and they all said to a man, effort. Like, they owned up to it. It's perplexing that you would have this problem in the NBA Finals and you have a chance to be 2 wins from a championship. I think, honestly, dominating the Suns towards the end of that series and then sweeping the Lakers, I think the Nuggets started to read their own press a little bit. I think they started to buy into the idea this is going to be easy. And guess what? Nothing's ever easy against Eric Spoelstra's Miami Heat. Like, it's not. And so, you know, I'm not surprised that Malone lit into his guys, because that's one thing he just can't stand. He can, he's willing to lose on missing a shot. He's willing to lose on, you know, putting a good effort in and the other team just being better, great players making great plays, but can't stand it when professional athletes don't put in the requisite effort. And the Nuggets simply didn't do that tonight, especially on the defensive side of the floor.
Why are the Miami Heat able to do this over and over again? Now 7 double-figure rallies for wins in these playoffs alone.
I think it's, look, we tend to ascribe meaning to these things. Like, it has to be, like, something about them. Like, it's got to be, like, well, they're just great. Like, they just get you out of this game plan. They just make you uncomfortable. And, like, I'm just here to tell you, like, I'm watching these games. I've watched all these playoff games.
Yes.
It's indescribable. Like, sometimes there's just runs that happen in sports that kind of defy convention, that kind of defy explanation. And we've seen it before. Like, this is part of what's great about sports, is that, like, miraculous stories happen. And quite honestly, that's a little of what's going on here. The Heat shot 49% from 3, and it wasn't their best shooting performance of the playoffs. They've shot better than 50%. They've shot better than 49% about six times in these playoffs. It's incredible for a team that, quite honestly, has never been great offensively. They were a good shooting team last year, but really their offense was always mediocre, and that's how they won this game, was with offense. The Denver Nuggets put up a 124 offensive rating. That's excellent. That's 78th percentile. They won this game with offense. Like, everyone wants to go back to, like, well, heat culture. I'm like, look, heat culture is about defense and grinding and, like, making things tough. That's not this. Like, they just find ways to make it happen. And that, I think, is a credit to Spoelstra, his coaching, finding ways to win the margins, about players being disciplined and understanding their roles, playing mistake-free basketball, not giving up easy points in terms of transition buckets and easy stuff at the rim. All that kind of sets you up to where, if you do get this kind of shooting performances that they've gotten since game one versus Milwaukee, you're going to have a chance to do something absolutely incredible and be the first 8 seed to win an NBA championship.
I mean, you make such a great point, because during the regular season, the Heat were among the bottom three in pretty much every offensive metric that you can use over the course of the 82 games. And here they are shooting the lights out in stretches, not always, of course, but in stretches, shooting the lights out against, it doesn't matter what defense gets thrown at them. When they're open, it's one or two guys usually that take the opportunity and just heat up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they do have quality shooters. Like, Duncan Robinson was phenomenal tonight. He was just incredible. You know, Max Strus did not go 1 of 9 again from three-point range. Not going to happen. But what's interesting is the other Heat in game one, outside of Strus and Duncan Robinson, all shot 50% or better from three. Not collectively, all of them. And so now you have two games, and like, all that happened in this one was Strus and Robinson shot better. So now you have the stretch where it's like, well, look, they all shot better again without any regression. Strus and Robinson accelerate towards their normal shooting percentages while the rest of the Heat continue to shoot the lights out. And that's how you wind up in this type of situation. Denver allowed them to get in rhythm. Don't want to take that away. Like, Miami triggered the actions and put enough pressure with Jimmy Butler, and especially Bam Adebayo, who's been incredible in the series, to cause breakdowns by Denver. Denver also just did, like, baffling things. They didn't understand how to execute a switch to save their life tonight, as if they were the Rockets. Like, it was terrible defensively from really the jump. And the only reason this game was close was because of an outlier Denver offensive performance from the bench in the second quarter. And if you're going to win the Nikola Jokic minutes by 11 points, as the Heat did tonight, you're going to have a really good chance to beat Denver. And they're going to hope to carry that forward as the series shifts to Florida.
Yeah, it's crazy that he had 41 points and he was still a minus number, not just a minus number, but a minus double figures. So I'm wondering, Matt, if you're Eric Spoelstra and the Heat, are you willing to give up that much if you can lock down most everybody else?
Yeah, Spo went off on Ramona Shelburne of ESPN, a great reporter, off after the game about how, like, you can't make Jokic a scorer. That's not the strategy. That demeans, like, how he plays the game and all these types of things. But the reality is this, is that the Denver Nuggets are now 1-4 when Nikola Jokic scores over 39 points or more. Like, the numbers are not good. The numbers are just not good when he puts up huge scoring performances. They're even bigger, though, when you dig deeper. It's when he has low assist totals. So if he has, like, a monster scoring and assist game, guess what? Denver's going to win. But if you can manage to hurt the other Nuggets with your defense, if you can stay home and make things uncomfortable for them, and quite honestly, like, the Nuggets didn't execute well. They didn't get into the two-man game. They didn't punish guys inside with the adjustment of Kevin Love.
Right.
MPJ was terrible tonight.
Cody Zeller. Yeah, he was.
And missed some really good shots, too. KCP missed good looks and honestly had a pretty bad defensive night. So, like, they got uncomfortable. And these are the things that Miami does that rattle everyone, where they just start to fall apart when they apply pressure after pressure after pressure. And it's not even necessarily, like, I can't say that they're playing guys really tight and playing awesome defense, but there's just something about the way that Miami plays that gets guys not to execute. And that cuts down on the assists, both opportunities and, you know, shooting percentage conversions on Jokic passes. And that's the path, is if Jokic is a one-dimensional scorer, they can win. They had a 110 offensive rating with Jokic on the floor tonight. That is well below his normal averages, both in the playoffs and regular season. So they did the job defensively. Again, if it wasn't for that second quarter bench run, this is a blowout. But the other side of that is all of these bad things happened for Denver, and they lost by three.
True. Matt Moore is an NBA insider for Action Network, joins us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. Something that we've seen from the Nuggets, not against the Heat even, but it did happen tonight, is they do allow teams to come back in and make it interesting. It happened twice in their sweep against the Lakers. We've seen it. I think it happened once against the Suns, too. Why is that?
I think the teams have to get used to playing them, and it kind of settles down. And I think some of this, quite honestly, a lot of it's the bench unit. Is that usually the bench unit for Denver struggles, and it happened again tonight. Even as good as they were in that first half, you saw that start to the fourth quarter, Duncan Robinson gets going when Jokic isn't on the floor. And so, like, that opens the door, and then you carry that momentum down the stretch. I think Denver also goes into a little bit of prevent offense when they have a big lead. They don't have the desire. The Warriors used to, like, try and take a 25-point lead and turn it into a 35-point lead, and a 35-point lead into a 50-point lead. The Nuggets are like, no, we're good with 12. 12 is totally fine. That's totally okay. 12 is reasonable. And so, like, they don't have that kind of desire to run the score up, and that kind of influences things, and it does open up for teams to be able to make these runs. But I don't know if that was this one. This one was more Denver simply wasn't ready for the combination of factors of Miami's three-point shooting, the zone defense, some of the tactics they use, some uncommon mistakes. It was a concert of things that happened to cause Denver to lose this game, but guess what? That's what Miami has done all throughout the playoffs.
Are you a big believer in home court advantage in the postseason or no?
I think it's team-centric. I think there's some teams that are really great at home, and Denver has been one of them, which is why I think this loss is especially worrisome for them, that this is where they've been undefeated. Miami has not been great at home. They've been much, much shakier at home in Miami. So, like, Denver can get a win there, but if Miami can win once in Denver, who's to say they can't win multiple times in Denver? And so that kind of opens it up. Look, it's better for Miami to have home court than not have home court. But in truth, I think it's more a matter of it's worse for Denver not to have it, is a better way to put it. Miami doesn't need home court. They need Denver to not have it. And now Denver doesn't.
Mm-mm. I love what Jimmy Butler had to say after the game. Actually, we can play it for you, Kevin, if you don't mind. Cut number 13. He was asked why the team is so resilient and why they continue to do what they do.
I just think nobody cares on our team. We're not worried about what anybody thinks. We're so focused in on what we do well and who we are as a group that at the end of the day, that's what we fall back on. Make or miss shots, we're going to be who we are, because we're not worried about anybody else. It's how it's been all year long, and that's not going to change. So that's what I think it is. I think it's the I don't give a damn factor.
I feel like the Miami Heat actually have an advantage with their chemistry. Not every team can say that, but when you truly have a team that doesn't give a damn, it seems to be an advantage for the Heat.
Yeah, I mean, look, they don't deal with the same kind of nonsense narrative. Nobody's trying to build a brand there, right? Like, this isn't the Brooklyn Nets with Kyrie and Kevin Durant trying to, you know, display their art or build a brand or whatever. They don't deal with those kind of expectations. Not the Lakers, where there's, like, constant kind of attention on them. They were able to go completely under the radar. That opens things up. A bunch of undrafted players not getting that kind of attention. Only really Gabe Vincent is playing for contract. So that's also good, too. That sets up things in a really positive way. One thing that I think has been interesting, though, has been the kind of conversation about Kevin Love and what he's brought. Because mm-hmm. in a lot of ways, the Heat chemistry was not great this year. They didn't look like they were having fun. Didn't look like they liked playing with each other. But that changed when Love got there. I think Love bringing a levity that kind of counterbalanced Jimmy's intensity has probably made some of the combination that's made this so successful for them.
Mm, and typically he plays, what, 6 to 8 minutes per game after starting? But tonight they needed him for 22 minutes.
Yeah, and he was good, you know, taking charges, being physical inside. That's a lot of this is, like, Love only can defend really one way underneath, and that's take charges. But if you do that, it does, like, muck up the lanes, and that causes some problems for Denver that Denver's going to have to try and adjust in game 2.
Matt Moore is with us from Denver after game 2. It's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio. If you don't mind, just want to ask you about some of the coaching hires we've seen. Nick Nurse in Philly, Ime Udoka in Houston, Monty Williams to Detroit. Which one of these fits do you like the best?
I think, you know, I love Monty Williams in Detroit. There's a lot of conversation about whether, you know, him not wanting that job and kind of having to be talked into it. But Williams is going to set a tone. He's going to get the players playing the right way. And that's a really good pass. And it's a really good hire, I think, for a number of reasons, which is, like, from the start of this is a black front office hiring a black coach at one of the highest figures in the league. And that's good for the trajectory of the league that's been trying to correct a problem with hiring practices amongst black Americans and former players throughout his time. So I think that's pretty significant. Honestly, I think Nick Nurse in Philly is a little bit weird. Joel Embiid has some comments about him. Nurse is hit or miss sometimes with how he connects with players. So his ability to kind of get people to buy in is going to be a big question mark here. Sometimes if you get him outside of the right context, it could be pretty rough. And him and Joel is going to be an interesting meeting of egos there in Philly. Those are the two that I think stand out the most.
We heard Adam Silver address the Ja Morant situation vaguely, of course, doesn't want to take any of the thunder away from the NBA Finals. Whether it's intel that you've gathered or your gut, what you think, what can we be talking about here for Ja in terms of punishment?
There's a pretty wide range that people are talking about, because if you ask some people what's a significant suspension, they're like 10 games. And if you ask some people what's a significant suspension, they're like 30 games. Oh. And you're like, whoa, okay. So, like, that's a wide disparity in there. That's kind of what we're starting. I lean more towards under 20. I think 10 to 15, losing a quarter of the season-ish before you start getting into a heavy, significant dose of this, I think is probably where we're going to land on this. And it should be noted, like, I think it's difficult to find to suspend a player that long without a fight in the stands, a fight with another player, and without breaking a law. I think that the absence of those three factors is going to make it difficult to get the NBPA to accept, without appeal and arbitration and all those things, a suspension that's that lengthy. But there is kind of a feeling around the league that Ja's crossed the line, that not a lot of people are willing to stand up for him. And that's kind of one of the questions. Is it doesn't seem like there's a lot of people around the league, and in amongst the players even, that are like, no, we got to stand by the guy based off of him making the same mistake twice.
So Adam Silver will have his say, and he did actually mention the NBAPA, that they were on board with it. So we'll wait until after the finals for that. You can find Matt on Twitter at HP Basketball, and he covers the NBA for Action Network, also has Locked on NBA, Locked on Nuggets podcast, joining us from Denver. Always good to catch up with you. Thank you so much for a couple of minutes.
Thanks, Amy.
So getting him to give us his insight after game number two, I think is really valuable. But now we've seen the strengths of each of these teams, the Denver Nuggets, as well as the Miami Heat. And I think one thing Matt had to say that really stands out is the Nuggets don't need to smash your face into the ground or trip you and steal your lunch money. They don't have that type of a tenacity. They don't have that type of a tude, I guess would be the better way to say it. They're okay with winning. Now, Mike Malone is not okay with winning, but the team itself, they're not trying to embarrass you. They're a nicer basketball team. Well, that leaves the door open for the Heat and plays right into their wheelhouse, as in right into their wheelhouse. All right, you can find us on Twitter, After Hours CBS. A lot of you were predicting, guessing, that there would be a sweep in the NBA Finals. Not so fast. You know what happens when you doubt the Miami Heat. Also, Tom Brady's still answering questions about whether or not he's returning to play football. And if you notice that every time he does, he reminds us he can still throw the football. He just chooses not to. Oh, well, we thought we'd inject some Tom Brady into your Sunday night / Monday morning to start off the work week. It's good to have you with us. Thanks for hanging out. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
T-Mobile's network can help keep you connected to all your favorite podcasts when you're out and about. Whether you're an early bird looking to dive into a daily news podcast or a night owl who wants to catch up on the latest reality TV drama, T-Mobile will keep you connected on their strong and reliable network. T-Mobile covers more highway miles with 5G than anyone. So if you need great coverage, especially when you're on the go, check out T-Mobile. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/CY. That's SEEWHY.
Your points are worth more than you think. This first-class flight to Tokyo, you can book it in your credit card portal for 1.4 million points. Yowzers. With PointMe, you could redeem just 120,000 points for that same flight. Now that's more like it. PointMe gets you 6 to 12 times the value for your points. Your credit card points are worth more than you think. PointMe. Better flights, fewer points.
Get started today at point.me. That's point.me.
Hey, can you hear me?
Okay, good. Well, so can your potential customers. Right here on your Odyssey station. You might be used to skipping social ads, but you are still listening to me right now. And so are your clients. To learn how to drive more business and how Odyssey can help get your message to your customers, visit stateofaudio.com. That's stateofaudio.com.
I think I'm actually going to miss Tom Brady in the NFL. I wasn't sure I would because we got a lot of him. But as has been typical with the retirements of some of the best quarterbacks, I have missed seeing them. And this goes back to when I was much younger and first in love with the NFL. But more recently, I miss seeing Drew Brees. I miss seeing Peyton Manning. I miss seeing Ben Roethlisberger, even though I actually think that I would prefer to miss him in that his podcast is can be cringy sometimes. But anyway, I miss seeing Philip Rivers every now and then. Definitely miss Eli Manning and will miss Tom Brady. Now, I'm not sure I'll miss Aaron Rodgers when he's gone. Maybe. That remains to be seen. But when you hear Gene Deckerhoff on Bucks Radio, maybe it gives you a little bit of a spark because, yeah, that's it for Brady. As he continues to tell us, he is not returning to play football. And I love that every time he does reiterate that publicly, he makes sure everyone knows, oh, it's not because I can't throw the football. It's because I choose to focus in other areas. He was on the Rich Eisen show recently.
I think there's other competitive ways to kind of get those things out. You know, I don't think that, you know, I think there's, it's just, I'll be competitive in other areas for sure.
Okay.
I will be. And I think that it doesn't necessarily need to be on a football field throwing footballs anymore. I mean, I can still do that. I'm just not going to do it competitively in a way that, you know, to be a part of an organization that way, because that's a huge commitment. And that commitment I don't take lightly. I don't think I ever took that commitment lightly. I thought I put 100% into everything. And I try to still put 100% into everything that I do. It just takes a little bit of a different shape or a little bit of a different direction. Then you could see other areas where, you know, I'm trying to contribute. And I think that I can be a part of different places and different organizations to help them be successful as well. And I think that's a big part of what my future looks like.
Tom Brady on the Rich Eisen show, reiterating that he will not be returning to play football. Nope. What he wants to do is be competitive in other areas. Now, he's got to practice his analysis, right? Because he will make his debut. And you know what? I shouldn't say that. He'll make his full-time debut. I bet we'll see him pop up in different Fox venues or at different Fox broadcasts this season. I wouldn't be surprised. Just to let him try it on for size. Just to integrate him to see if he's comfortable, to make sure the desk is comfortable with him. I mean, this is a different type of thing. This is the best quarterback of all time. And you don't just drop him onto a TV set and hope that it works out well and there's great chemistry. Now, for the most part, he'll be in a broadcast booth and he'll be working with Kevin Burkhardt. Much to Greg Olson's chagrin. Or no, they won't make it a three-man booth. That's not possible. So I'm sure they'll do test runs and trial runs with Kevin. And Kevin's easy. He's like Mike Tirico. He can work with anyone. He'll make it work because that's what a play-by-play guy does or play-by-play gal does. You have to adapt. On TV, you have to adapt to your analyst, not the other way around. So in 2024, he'll be full-time at a broadcast booth. But I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him before then. Just kind of dropping in, saying, hola. So yeah, he needs to practice his analysis. His podcast with Jim Gray that airs, well, it's a show and then it's turned into the Let's Go podcast on SiriusXM. That's an opportunity for him to work out those broadcasting muscles. Because trust me, it's not easy for athletes, especially athletes at the highest level. Same thing, same challenge as when they try to become coaches. A lot of times the best ever athletes at their positions or at their sports don't make great coaches. Larry Bird couldn't. He did it for a while and he was successful, but he got so frustrated, he said, because He couldn't get them to do what he wanted them to do or get them to play the game the way that he did, get them to see the game the way that he did. And so with the high standard and high expectations, I'm not sure Tom Brady would be a great coach. I think he'd be super frustrated. Though there's been an element of him coaching his teammates and with the maturity and wisdom and experience that he brought to the table, of course, guys were relying on him. So there is that aspect. But once you move to a broadcast booth, you've got to be able to criticize. You've got to be able to share both the positive and the negative. Not every broadcaster who's a former athlete can do that. They sometimes get a little nervous about critiquing their former peers. But can you say it with grace? Can you say it with, hey, I've been there. I've been in their shoes. So Brady's practicing on his show, on his podcast, which will return for football season. And then whenever he gets the opportunity, he's been doing a lot of interviews lately. Again, with the Rich Eisen show, he was asked about Aaron Rodgers moving to the Jets. Now, not the same stage as him moving to the Bucks. However, where Tom Brady goes, there is a spotlight, just like Aaron Rodgers.
I think he's going to do a great job. I mean, he's a tremendous player, great competitor. And I think this kind of breathes a lot of fresh air and invigoration into, you know, going to a different team and wanting to prove yourself all over again. And I think we all have that spirit about us that, you know, when we started off in the NFL, you know, we had something to prove and we wanted to go out there. And the team that drafted us, you know, God, there was a lot of freshness to it. And you took it and you really attacked it. And I see that with him too, you know, being a part of being in New York. And there's a lot of expectation there. And there's a lot of eyes and there's a lot of media. And I think he's going to go out there and he's going to do a great job. And that division is very competitive with Buffalo. With the Jets, I think Miami's a talented team. And obviously New England, you know, with the amazing culture that they've built over a long period of time. So Aaron's tremendous player, tremendous passer of the football. I've always kind of watched him and studied his mechanics and how he goes about things. But I think he's going to do a great job. And he's got a lot of talented players there too. A lot of young players that have a lot of speed, quickness, and I think when you look back at probably his most productive years, and he's had a lot of them, you know, he's had great receivers and those receivers, we all need great receivers as quarterbacks to be productive and prolific. And I think he's got a great opportunity to do that in New York.
Tom Brady on the Rich Eisen show. It's interesting as I'm listening to him this second or third time I've heard it, but as I'm listening to him, I'm realizing, well, his analysis, of course, is spot on. He has no trouble speaking his mind and speaking clearly and concisely. I would say maybe even ahead of the game from where Tony Romo was when he took over. Romo can be a little more volatile. We'll see whether or not Brady gets excited the way that Romo does. I can't imagine that. He tends to be relatively reserved away from the football field at all times, not just now. But he's not going to have any trouble talking football. And that's an indicator, as he speaks about Aaron, that he's considered some of the various factors that he can make a concise argument, and yet he's got no trouble filling up 60 seconds. I think the challenge will be that on TV, you don't have that type of time, right? So one of the things that I have always said about TV, people ask me a lot, would you like to go into TV or when will you make the jump to TV? And I've done TV, but there's never enough airtime for me. So Brady on radio with his show, with his podcast, with his various media appearances, that's different than Brady in a broadcast booth. Also, there will be no F-bombs. Not likely. But you can hear the different faces and the different voices of Tom Brady, right? He's very calculated as he's talking about Aaron Rodgers with Rich Eisen. But then on his own radio show with his buddy, he calls him Scratchy, Jim Gray, they go way back. They're longtime friends. He trusts him. He's probably a little more open. It's funny because as we were doing our show last Thursday night into Friday morning, one of the questions we threw out there, and this was actually a lot of fun, in honor of Roger Federer partnering with Waze, Although at some point they'll probably part ways too. But in honor of Roger Federer voicing the Waze app, we were asking you what athlete or celebrity or entertainer would you like to give your directions while you're driving. I don't recall that anyone said Tom Brady. I think that'd be interesting. He can get salty, spicy. Kevin, what about you? Is there a particular athlete or entertainer that you would like to offer your directions on the Waze app?
Hands down, Mike Tyson.
Mike Tyson.
He would have a field day with that.
He would. Also, you'd need someone to bleep it out for you. Unless, well, if it's just you in your car. But what if it's your mom or grandmother or...
Well, if it's my grandmother, especially my grandmother, yeah, we would have to go back to the original series.
PG version?
GPS. But I think that would make a lot of money. If you had Mike Tyson do a voiceover with a GPS, how could you not buy it? Like, you would have to listen to it to give it a chance. So I would probably ride with Mike.
It definitely is a genius idea. I love it. And apparently I missed it when Yoda was voicing Waze, because that would have been amazing. For me, Yoda or James Earl Jones, a big Star Wars fan, of course. But there are many other voices that I wouldn't mind hearing, or characters. So Mike Tyson's a great one, because you would get some salt with that too. Gilbert Gottfried, a bunch of people said in that voice.
One.
Oh my goodness. That's pretty crazy. Some of the actors that, Will Ferrell would be really funny too. If they were allowed to be funny.
I was going to say, if he was still with us, Chris Farley, that would be a good one.
Could you imagine? Yeah, there's some real good ones out there that I think would be a hoot if they're allowed to have a personality. So that's the thing. They can't just be run-of-the-mill and be reading phrases. They have to be allowed to yell at us or have personalities. Mr. T, that was
that
was suggested that was really funny, too. All right, on Twitter, A-Law Radio. You're not going to believe it, but there's another whale video from the same Twitter account that gave us the whale around the kayak. Actually, it wasn't a kayak. The whale around the paddleboard last week that so many of you went crazy for, and that I've only watched, I don't know, 15 times, probably more than that, where there's another whale video, but there's a twist to this one. I'll explain, because now that I've seen the second whale video, I tend to be more skeptical of the first one from last week. So again, on Twitter, A-Law Radio, then our Facebook page too. We're glad to have you with us as we work our way into a Monday morning. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. We are talking about the number of times the Miami Heat have rallied from double figures down in these NBA playoffs. Well, did you know we've got the hockey version in the Vegas Golden Knights, who now have the 1-0 lead in the Stanley Cup Final, that game coming from Saturday night in Las Vegas with Dan Duva on the call on Golden Knights Radio. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Nine times the Golden Knights have fallen behind in a playoff game only to rally for the dub. Nine times. Now, they did trail in the first period against the Panthers, but that lead for Florida didn't last very long. So it was first period, and they were tied at one. The Golden Knights were up 2-1 in the second, and then late in the second period, the Panthers were able to tie it. Okay, so like 10 seconds or so to go in the second period, the Panthers tie it. So they go into the third period, not in it too, but then the capability of the Golden Knights to score, to explode offensively at any point, three goals, and they win it going away. So that we had talked about this before, the resiliency of the Heat compared to the resiliency of the Panthers. And boy, have we seen it from both of these eight seeds over the course of the last couple months. So with his team now in an 0-1 hole, Paul Maurice of the Panthers, well, maybe this is exactly where we need to be.
It's going to be tight like that. Both goalies made some big saves. Special teams will keep getting better on both sides, right? To figure each other out. We just don't see each other very much, so we'll learn as we go.
It's a good point. When you're talking about series that pit eats East against West, while you can certainly watch tape, scout, yada, yada, you don't get to see each other very often in the regular season on the ice, which is where a lot of the intel comes from. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Now some of you are answering the question about the voice you would most like to direct you on the Waze app if you have a choice. This is in honor of Roger Federer. I miss him on the tennis court, that's for sure. And Rafael Nadal, who had hip surgery late last week, and so he's essentially out for the year. We may not see Rafa compete at the highest level again. I'm hoping that's not the case. He's holding out hope, but that's was the same case for Roger Federer, right, who had tried multiple operations and ultimately wasn't able to get back to the level that would allow him to compete. Have we now seen the last of both Roger and Rafa? Injuries bringing to end their careers, though they are extremely accomplished. So that opens the door for Novak Djokovic, who has made it into the French Open quarterfinals, and it's his 14th consecutive trip to the French Open quarterfinals. 14th straight year. He's tracking a 23rd Grand Slam singles title, and for the men, that would be the all-time record. Right now, tied with Rafa at 22 each. So we will, well, we'll hear from him after the top of the hour, but right now I'm all in on Novak. I love history, and certainly Carlos Alcaraz will have something to say about that. Into the quarterfinals, you got these two guys on a collision course. Now, they would meet in the semis, okay? So they meet in the final four, but Alcaraz, who's world number one, also is into the quarters in Paris, in Au Paris. So we'll talk a little tennis over the after the top of the hour. Game two of the Stanley Cup Final is Monday night. 855-212-4227. Ali is in Miami. Welcome to After Hours.
How are you? Much blessed. I love your show. It's been a while.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I know you were talking about Tom Brady, you know.
For like 2 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I feel like Tom Brady's the most intelligent quarterback that ever played the game. I mean, he'd be a great, you know, GM or a executive. I see Tom Brady being, you know, an impact in the NFL after he retires, right? He has too much knowledge. I mean, the way he came up, the grind that he went through, his level of knowledge and understanding is beautiful, you know. I don't see him successful, you know, on the stage where, you know, he's a spokesman, but I feel like his impact would be, you know, for a team where he teaches people his knowledge. I feel like he's one of the most intelligent, you know, QBs next to Peyton Manning.
Mm. Well, he did speak at the rookie symposium, so he was trying to share some of that wisdom and experience with the next generation of quarterbacks. And, of course, he will be opening up and talking in a broadcast booth. What about him as an owner? Because I don't, maybe GM, but right now it seems like what he most wants to do is get into ownership and buying a stake in the Raiders.
And again, that would be great. I mean, on any level where he's able to provide his knowledge to the players in general, for mm-hmm. every player, not just quarterbacks, and just be able to be, you know, provide his knowledge and understanding of football. He's the most smartest quarterback that I've seen, at least in my lifetime, right? I'm 39, so to see a quarterback that's so smart and so intelligent, I would love to see him bring an impact to the NFL in any organization, regardless of where he goes. He's an intelligent QB, and I would love to see that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the sky is the limit for him, per the usual. It was when he played football, and it is now in business. And he has many other business ventures. Remember, he was part of producing that movie, well, and starring in that movie that came out, 80 for Brady. Gronk was in that, too. But his production company is the one that put together Man in the Arena, that 10-part series about him, which I haven't yet watched, but I am hoping to watch it.
Me neither. I would love to watch that. That's awesome.
Yeah. You know, so his production company's busy, too, and he's got his show, his radio show, and he'll be working in broadcasting. So there's a lot of other things that he plans to do. But it reminds me a little bit of LeBron James, who's already very diversified when it comes to business and has got a production company of his own as well. So Brady is well-insulated and well-prepared to not be bored in the future.
Definitely. And you know, to see individuals like that, you know, and, you know, I'm a Miami Heat fan. To see, you know, individuals like that, like Pat Riley is one of them, you know, mm-hmm. the people that played the game, that understand the game, that want to teach that knowledge to the you know, the new players coming up, you know. And Pat Riley is one of my, you know, mentors, and I love him. And to see great players like him to teach others, that's what it's about, you know, to give that knowledge to the players that are coming up and to be a part of an organization and to get players and to be able to see that, right? Mm-hmm. I would love to see, you know, Tom Brady be a GM and to be able to, you know, bring, you know, great players in the league, you know, same way Pat did, you know, and go Miami Heat in the finals. It was incredible.
That was. I mean, this is what they do. All right, Ali, good to hear from you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Love you.
855-212-4227. The only thing is, if Brady buys this part ownership in the Raiders, which he's moving forward with, he can't be a GM of another team. That would be a conflict of interest. So I don't know if he has any designs on being a GM. Remember, Peyton Manning had been asked about working in a front office, but he's not there yet. He loves his broadcasting and all his different media ventures with his company, Omaha Productions. Omaha! I wonder if he says it like that every time, or he can just stand there with a straight face and say, Omaha. Novak next. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.